Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got Romain, the CEO of Sato Technologies, a innovative Bitcoin mining company that just went public in Canada on the Canadian Stock Exchange. So we have a great conversation all about awesome topics, including AI, Bitcoin mining, and much, much more. So tune in for another action-packed episode. But before I let you go, hit that subscribe button wherever you get podcasts. Give me a 5-star rating. Help spread the show. And remember that this is not financial advice. Everything you hear in this podcast is not financial advice. It's strictly the opinion of Romain and myself. And big shout out to my sponsors. Shout out to the Bitcoin Advisor. Bitcoin Advisor is helping you find solutions for cold storage, find solutions to make sure that you are not a single point of failure for your Bitcoin. We offer help with multi-sig. We offer help for estate planning and much, much more. So contact us at thebitcoinadvisor.com/greencandle. In order to set an appointment to get your Bitcoin off an exchange, we can help you do that and much, much more. So be sure to tune in and check us out. Also, shout out to Hodlers Official. That's Hodlers Official.com. Just came out with some sick, sick, sick orange basketball jerseys. One with Satoshi and one with Nakamoto on the back. So you could buy either one there. He's only made 121. So be sure to go to his website and get one of them, get them both. There's a limited edition, and you can use promo code GreenCandle for 10% off. All right, enough from me. Let's get into the episode. Whoosh. Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast where I've got Romain. He's the chairman and co-founder of Sato Technologies. And we'll get into everything that Sato does. But one thing that did catch my eye was the combination of AI and Bitcoin mining. And there's been a lot of talk around the Bitcoin space about AI, artificial intelligence, for the kids at home who don't know exactly what that stands for. But how do you see that these two worlds sort of mixing together, not only in Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, but also like in the greater Bitcoin ecosystem? How do you kind of see these worlds playing out, as both of them seemingly are developing at a rapid pace and kind of, together in a sense?
Great first question. First, I'm very happy to be with you. I love to talk about Bitcoin and any other things. And the merge of Bitcoin and AI is an extremely interesting subject. And the common denominator is energy. The fact that you need to transform energy to do Bitcoin mining is in a way similar to do for AI and HPC. HPC standing for high performance computer. This is everything related to LLM, ChatGPT, Bard, Grok now on Twitter or X. The demand for computing power in general is increasing and will continue to increase. The way we manage energy and the efficiency that we have developed for Bitcoin mining is key in the way we will need to develop it also for AI and HPC. And the fact that we can merge it together and have a data center that does both at the same time makes sense. Why? Because in Bitcoin mining, we have something that is unique that AI and HPC and other data center doesn't have. We have curtailment. Curtailment is the fact that we can stop our computers in a heartbeat, in a few milliseconds, on a few seconds. And we do that because we are giving back the energy to the grid. By doing this, we are balancing the grid, so it means that we can use energy that was wasted before. And when the population needs it, we are just giving the energy back. And it's very interesting for an energy provider, a municipality, a country, because all of a sudden you are having less curve in your usage of your energy. Most of the time, if you look at the energy consumption during the day, it's used mainly in the morning when people make their breakfast, and at night when people recharge their Tesla or their electric car. Also, when it's cold or when it's hot, people are tending to use more energy. with Bitcoin miners, when you have a Bitcoin miner in the electrical grid, we can use the energy that is not used before, so that we put the energy at the same level most of the time, and you don't have the ups and downs. So it's better for the environment because you are stressing less your infrastructure. It's better for the energy provider because it's more revenues and more margin. And only Bitcoin miners, we can stop that way. With a traditional Facebook or even AI or YouTube, you can't turn your computers off. And even other industries, if you are like a manufacturers of, I don't know, like producing steel, for example, you can't stop your industry like in a few minutes. So the fact that we can combine the two together really makes sense. And this is why you have seen not only us, but you have seen lots of Bitcoin miners going into the AI and HPC market. It's at the energy level, in the fact that we can manage and transform this energy in computing power for both at the same time.
Yeah, that's a great answer and a great, great response. But yeah, I mean, it is pretty interesting. The Bitcoin mining space as a whole is something that, you know, I guess it interests me from like an engineering perspective, right? Because, you know, there's just so many different factors that can go into it, right? It's the, not only like the computing power, it's the energy where you're getting it. And, you know, maybe the uses for heat or the usage of some renewable or runoff energy, you know, those kind of things. So, you know, when it comes to Bitcoin mining, you know, which one of these, I guess, factors in a sense do you think is most important? Obviously, you know, you can only develop, you know, new miners at such a rapid pace. And, you know, the, I guess, energy contracts, so to speak, of how much you're paying for per kilowatt hour can vary depending on your energy source, how you get it and those kind of things. So, you know, when you're kind of evaluating, you know, Bitcoin mining, even for somebody maybe that's evaluating at home, which kind of things do you think that, you know, I guess a general plug and play miner should be like evaluating?
Well, the things that I would say is that in the industry, and this is what I love Bitcoin mining, it strives for performance. Whatever you do is performance. And the beauty of it, it's performance at the very little, nanometers at the ASIC level, and to the very big, huge fans, huge energies that you are transforming. And in all the steps on transforming this energy into Bitcoin, we are striving for performance. So it starts with energy, you will convert from high voltage to low voltage to medium voltage, and in order to put the right voltage in the back of your Bitcoin miners. If you can make sure that you will give them the right voltage at a steady level, you need to have like a very stable energy, you will have more performance of your computers. Because most of the time people are talking about the price of energy, but it's not enough. You need to also think of having a stable energy and making sure that your miners can run 24/7 or close to 24/7. And also in the long term, because you want to make sure that you can have a return on investment and then really make pure Bitcoin, free Bitcoin once the miners have been amortized. But it's also about like heat dissipation. And the heat dissipation, you have it at a different level. You have it at the chip level, at the ASICs level. If you open a Bitcoin miner, you will see the ASICs, a chip. It's a chip. It's called ASICs because it only does Bitcoin mining. But then you have a heat sink on top of it. And it's about dissipating the heat produced by this ASIC. Then you have the miner in itself. You have fans in and out, making sure that you can have air cooling. You have two types of cooling into our business. You have air cooling and liquid cooling, but let's talk about air cooling. You have the fans taking air in cooling the chip in the middle with the heat sink dissipating the heat, and then it will put heat at the back of the miners. So this is the performance that is designed at the miners level. And on this, we miners, the only thing we have to do, I would say, is to buy the more performant miners produced by a few manufacturers, Bitmain, the most known. You have also WattsMiner, who are taking, I would say, 80% of the market share. Even now, we are seeing more Bitcoin miners, new rigs coming to the market. So it's interesting because it gives us more options, but it's about like performance at the chip level and how we can be more performant at dissipating the heat produced by the chip. Once this is done, and once you buy the new performant and the most performant miners, everyone can do it. You just buy a miner and you pay more and you will have more performance. But the other part where we can bring performance is at the data center level. You can do air cooling or liquid cooling. We do air cooling. We mine from Quebec in Canada. We're lucky to have a cool air most of the year. And what we do is that we take the cold air from inside. We filter it. We make sure that this cold air will go into a place that is mixed with the hot air from outside, from the miners, that we rebalance to this in air intake that we have at the beginning. And that way, by balancing and having the same type of temperature all year round, the same type of energy all year round, our miners are extremely efficient and performant for a long time being, because it's not only being performant at day one, but it's also being performant at day 2 years or 3 years. That's how you are bringing the most revenues and the most margin with your operation. And in every step of the transformation, we need to find the small percentage, you know, will make us more performant. Do we want to put 238 volt behind the miners or 240 volt? That has a difference. Do we want to have like an air with a an entry of around like a 25 or 20 degrees? It can also modify. It can be modified also during the year and during the price of the Bitcoin. You can also play with the software of the miner itself. Or you can bring more or less power in the miner, which will bring more or less Bitcoin. So sometimes you will produce less Bitcoin, but it will cost less energy. So it's interesting in some circumstances. And sometimes you will want to put more energy to produce more Bitcoin because it makes more money. So all of this part of transformation of this energy into computing power, we strive for performance. And Bitcoin miners like us, we are always looking to be more performant because it's a question of death or life for us. And to also give you another point that is interesting, it's about the heat reuse. We are not the only miners doing this, but we are reusing the heat produced by our miner. Since the beginning of the company, when we started in 2017, we are sending some of the heat into the factories that is hosting us. So it's a very simple utilization of the heat, but it's quite interesting because during winter, they don't have to use heaters or buy electricity or energy to create heat. We are producing it for free. But now most of the Bitcoin miners like us, we are trying to get to another step. What we did on our side, we did a partnership with the University of Quebec. And we had two PhDs working with us for 6 months in order to get real data on how to reuse the heat that is produced by the Bitcoin miners that we have, because data is all. So we wanted to have real data for the heat reuse. We found with air cooling that we can reuse around 82 to 86% of the heat that has been produced by the Bitcoin miners. With liquid cooling, you can go even higher. I've seen studies where you can go closer to 95-96% of reusing the heat. And this is why for Bitcoin miners, industrial Bitcoin miners like us, we are striving to get huge usage that we can really use the heat that we produce. It could be for vertical farming, it could be for providing energy to different kind of industries. Some people are developing like a spa, for example. There is a spa in New York that is using the energy and the heat from the Bitcoin miners. And it's also something that is happening at the personal level. There are lots of people today who are buying a heater, and inside this heater, there is a Bitcoin miner in it. And obviously, it's a good idea. I mean, if you're buying energy to create heat, it would be better to buy energy to create heat and Bitcoin. So with one thing, you create two things. It's smart, and I think we're going to see that way more, and probably with more usage around the world.
Yeah, and I definitely agree with that. I think that that's going to be the way. You know, I think soon enough, energy is going to be too expensive, where everybody's going to be looking for other solutions to use use a Bitcoin miner to, you know, whether it's a water heater or heat bathroom floors or, you know,
swimming pool, yeah, whatever. Yeah.
In the winter, I think that that's going to kind of be the way in everybody's personal home, you know, maybe in the near future. But the one thing that I think is going to be interesting in this next upcoming year is obviously the halving, but there's also, you know, a lot of geopolitical risk when it comes around to like election time, right? I mean, Bitcoin's going to be a hot button topic no matter where you're at, right? Because we've had, you know, obviously El Salvador, but now Javier Milei got elected. He's going for dollarization. There's been some rumblings about, you know, some of the geopolitical issues with you know, Canada and some of these other places that have a lot of hash, a lot of hash power, like, you know, kind of going through that stuff. So, you know, in a sense, obviously you guys are using renewable energy, you're figuring out other ways to use the heat. How do you view, I guess, the geopolitical climate when it comes to Bitcoin mining? Do you view that as somewhat of a worry, or do you think that, you know, I mean, it's all just kind of smoke and mirrors at this point?
I'm mixed, and I'm telling you why, because we're always an election away from having a different decision than what exists today. However, I'm also an optimistic, and I believe that the fact that we use the energy correctly, that we are not wasting energy, and we are transforming energy to create things that are needed, computing power, heat, I believe more and more people will want to have people like us on the electrical grid. Look at what we do in our municipality. In Quebec, we're in a municipality. It's a city an hour north of Montreal, around like 20,000 inhabitants. They had like 100 megawatts for the whole city, using 60 megawatts most of the time, with peak at 80 megawatts. With us, we are able to use the energy that was wasted before, and they are able to monetize something that was not non-monetized. So we are putting this energy at 80 megawatts all the time, and this delta of 20 megawatts that they were not selling before, they are selling it with us. So with that, they are making more money, more margin, and it's a redistribution to the inhabitants at the end. We are also creating jobs, not a lot of jobs, but Quebec, there is no unemployment issue anyway. We have worked with lots of contractors around our city for maybe $5 million, electricians, constructors, and all this kind of stuff. And we are reusing our heat. So the benefit that we are producing, when you see the benefit that we are bringing at the local level, my guess is that we will be needed at the global level. And this is what we've been doing. And we are not also the only one doing it. I think TerraWolf, for example, or Iris, they have also like this kind of approach of having a very local approach and then grow from there. And this is why I'm optimistic, because in the world where we are going to, we will need more computing power, whatever it happens, and mainly even more for AI and HPC. If as a country, you are not providing a strong computing power to your citizens, it's your companies who are going to be less performant. It's your universities who are going to be less performant. It's your citizens who are going to be less performant. And it can continue like this forever. So we need more computing power. I understand the environmental issues, but I think we have debunked most of the issue related to the environmental issue, and that today showing that we can use the energy the right way is more important than where the energy is coming from. We are using energy. This is the human race. We need energy to continue our development. We are not going to stop. But what is changing, and this is why I love Bitcoin mining, because, and I'm not saying we are the only industry, of course, doing this, but the efficiency that we are striving for is so key that I think it will be a benefit in the future. And this is why we're going to see more and more data centers, Bitcoin miners, computing power, AI and HPC working the right way for local and global. After that, on the currency level, it's also a question, you know, like, should we have a CBDC, like it is, for example, a debate in the US? It has also, it's interesting to see in the United States, to see that it now it becoming like a debate into the future election. I think it's Vivek Ramaswamy, who's really like a kind of like defending Bitcoin. He was at the blockchain, the American blockchain conference. I saw him like a few weeks ago, who has put like a plan in place. Of course, Kennedy, but Kennedy is also like a prominent for Bitcoin. To some extent, I'm not a big fan of it because I think Bitcoin should be apolitical. It should really be not partisan and everything. And the problem, not only in the US, it's everywhere in the world. If you have one party for, you're going to have the other party who's against. And it's not going to help us at the end. But it's interesting to see that it's coming more and more. And I think the ETF will also bring more focus on Bitcoin. And the good thing with the ETF is that it will probably bring also respectability on Bitcoin, and more people will be okay to hold Bitcoin, understand Bitcoin. So I'm pretty much optimistic, even so I understand the challenges that are coming around us.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think the ETF and will bring some. It will bring definitely bring an institutional capital, bring a lot of money, and because a big institution is kind of getting into it, like BlackRock, you know, I think at a certain point, you know, the politicians are gonna have to listen, or at least like not speak ill of Bitcoin, because you know BlackRock's essentially funding a lot of their campaigns and backing them. So you know, either way you want to look at it, like the money that's coming from BlackRock is going to be shoveled into politics some way, shape, or form. But I alluded to it a little bit earlier, the halving, right? I mean, everybody's always jacked up about it. They think, you know, hey, if you look at it from a macro perspective, we got the ETF, the halving, and, you know, in the US, pulling back interest rates. So all these would make number go up, theoretically, which would lead to a great environment in 2024. But from a mining perspective, obviously the hash is going to, you know, the hash has kind of continued to raise during a bear market for the first time in any Bitcoin bear market. And it's going to be harder to get those block rewards, right? I mean, obviously the halving is Bitcoin block rewards get cut in half. So, you know, with all this being said, yeah, I guess where's your head at as a Bitcoin miner when it comes to the halving event? Are you excited that it's coming? Or are you a little bit, you know, worried, like I need to buckle up and make sure everything, you know, I have all my ducks in a row? Like, how do you approach it from like a Bitcoin miner's perspective?
Well, at this time of the year, I'm excited because it's happening, it's coming, and we've been seeing it a long time. If you start thinking about the halving today, you're dead. We've seen halving before. It's my third halving, I think, as a miner, and it's really exciting because yes, it creates less revenues in a sense, because our revenues is divided by two. We are the block is producing twice less Bitcoin, but at the same time, this is where we have seen scarcity into Bitcoin, and as you said before, this element of the halving coming, creating less Bitcoin on the market. This is one of the reasons we exist. We exist, of course, to validate the transaction, but also to put Bitcoin in the market, on the market, like for people to use and to buy. Some of the Bitcoin miners, we have a hold or HODL strategy, but we are also selling our Bitcoin at some point. And that's how people are buying our Bitcoin. They are buying the Bitcoin that we miners are making. So the fact that we are producing twice less Bitcoin will create more scarcity at a time where, as you said, the ETF is probably coming. At a time also where you have very much less volume on Bitcoin. And you can see Bitcoin are not too much on exchanges right now. So people are not there to exchange, but more to keep them long term. So that's that will also create more scarcity. You are also at a time where you have this new accounting rule in the US that is interesting, this fair value approach, where more corporations will be able to hold Bitcoin without having too much issues in the way they are accounted for it. And also, there is also one thing that is still happening. We are still printing money in the US, in Europe. And at the end, this money that is printed is also going into buying new stuff, because one, people want to protect themselves from the inflation created by this printing of money. And also because sometimes, like last time during COVID, I receive a check and some of the people receiving the check, they put it in Bitcoin. For those who've done it, it was probably an amazing investment. So that's why I'm super excited with the halving and being prepared for it. We are pretty confident of the output of the situation. It's coming really soon now, beginning of Q2 of next year.
Yeah, I think like they're saying like April-ish, maybe May of next year. I don't remember seeing the exact date, but around that
it could
time.
It could change depending on the difficulty. One thing that is interesting, so that lots of people have not really, or we started to see it, but lots of analysts have probably undervalued, this is the increase of the fees. We are making more as a Bitcoin miner, as you know, we are making revenues from the block reward, but also from the fees every block. And these fees have been increasing and increasing, mainly because of Ordinals recently. But it also means that the block size has more value over time. And for us, Bitcoin miner, it's interesting because for now, it is counterbalancing the increase of the hash rate because we are making more revenues with the fees, but less with the reward, but at the end, we're making the same amount of money or even more. And it's also interesting for us in the future because we have the halving coming and then we need to think about the next halving and the next halving. I think in total for the Bitcoin life, we're going to see more than 100 halving, 104, I think. This is going to be the fourth one. So it's really an interesting time for us. And I believe, nobody has a crystal ball, of course, but I believe we will see something in a bull market that happens where the price of the Bitcoin is higher than the hash rate. And this is where Bitcoin miners are making a lot of money. Right now, we are at the opposite level. And that's why a bear market is extremely difficult. And the only way you can be successful in the bear market, it's about efficiency. And efficiency starts with your electricity. And of course, the price of the electricity that you pay, you need to have a low price of electricity, but also being efficient in how you manage it. But when you are efficient in a bear market, the bull market is a breeze. So we're excited.
Yeah. So, I mean, you brought it up. I want to ask you about ordinals because, obviously that from people that use Bitcoin as transactions, they absolutely hate it, right? I mean, it's even increasing the fees on the Lightning Network. It's making it, the minuscule payments a little bit more difficult to use, which is, one of the great use cases of Bitcoin. But from a miner's perspective, it seems like it's great, right? I mean, you're getting, like you said, you're getting more of the block rewards. It's kind of helping navigate through this one unique bear market where the hash rate has been increasing. And Bitcoin's been at kind of a lower price. Obviously, we've seen a little bit of a run up now, but it hasn't been quite as high as, it was at its all time high. We're sitting at 43,000 right now. So as we're recording this, which is, obviously great compared to where it was at 20,000. But overall, what's the view on ordinals? Do you see the use case or do you just kind of like the fact that, you're getting a little bit more reward as a miner?
Yeah, I mean, we see a use case. It's more for us. It's more than just being more money and from the fees. First of all, I mean, it's interesting that we're talking about this today because yesterday was the first birthday of Ordinal. The first Ordinal inscription zero was inscribed by a guy called Cassie Rodarmo like a year ago on one day. So it's interesting to note that. What I love about it is that it brought innovation into Bitcoin. It has brought a new way of ingenuity to Bitcoin and the way to bring new people to Bitcoin. And this is what we need. We need to have more people using Bitcoin on a day-to-day basis, more than just for transaction. Ordinals, the fact that we can inscribe in the block some information. By the way, Satoshi Nakamoto did it himself. He inscribed stuff in the block himself. So this is not new in a way. What is new with Ordinal is the fact that we can ordinate and give a number to the Satoshis that are created in every block. And that is kind of interesting because it's also bringing another thing that is interesting in Ordinal. It brings a rare sats. You have sats who are more rare than other sats. So it's not really an issue because of creating two types of different of Bitcoin. It's more interesting because it's for people who are inscribing Ordinal, it's art most of the time, they find a value to inscribe this art into a Satoshi that is a little bit more rare than another one. What do we find? We find the first sat of a blob, the first sat of an epoch, the first sat of the next halving. This one is going to be extremely, extremely expensive. Today, you can get the first sat of a block. It's called an uncommon. You can buy it today on the market for around $200. One sat that you can sell for $200. That's what 100 million percent return on investment. The one, the sat called Epic for the halving. I think there is one. There is only three in circulation because there was only three halving. I think there is one. It has not been sold yet, but I think there is one for sale at $1 million. And there is a possibility that the one for the next halving will be also like super expensive. Imagine you're a very known artist and you want to create a collection on Bitcoin that will live forever on Bitcoin. This is the beauty of Ordinals. Whatever you inscribe, it will live forever on Bitcoin. You can use a node in 200 years. You will be able to find your art. A little bit like if you were doing a painting of yourself and making sure that this painting would be made, put in a museum at some point. People will always find it. So we really like it in that sense because it brings this kind of innovation into Bitcoin, and it was needed because the more usage we have, the best it is. Now, as you said, it also creates some kind of issues, mainly increasing the transaction fees. Even if it's good for Bitcoin miners, it's not always good in general. And we've seen, for example, on Ethereum a few years ago, a few months ago, there was like a congestion of the network because the fees were way too much, and mainly because of people using NFTs and using NFTs in games and this kind of stuff. So we've seen by the past that it's not always great. Same thing for the Lightning Network. In Lightning Network, you need to open a channel, do a first transaction from the L1 to the L2. If this first transaction costs $100 for you to use $10 in the Lightning Network, this is not going to work. However, what Ordinal has bought is this kind of intelligence and ingenuity into Bitcoin. And for example, with Ordinals, what we have seen since the beginning, we've seen a new way to inscribe Ordinal called recursive. And recursive, it's mainly for larger collection. If let's say you have 10,000 collections that you want to inscribe, instead of inscribing 10,000 images, you will only inscribe the threads. Like for example, I don't know, CryptoPunk. Instead of inscribing 10,000 punks, you will inscribe 500 of the different threads, and then the recursive will recreate the image by itself. So this kind of like creativity, I think, is coming, and this is why I'm excited and optimistic again on the fact that we will find ways to lower the fees while having more people joining L2s at some point.
Yeah, I agree. I think it put a little stress on the market. So even if Ordinals, the use case doesn't last, maybe it gets phased out, I don't know. But either way, it kind of helps us figure out a way to navigate the higher fee environment, right? I mean, whether that's, I don't know, there's been a hot button debate on liquid Bitcoin or maybe some other like layer two or layer three even solution that we can get. So I think all these things, it just kind of like forces the hand of a little bit of more innovation, which, obviously Bitcoin mining, that every 4 years, you got to kind of prepare for that halving or the halving event in order to basically survive as a miner. So in that sense, right, I mean, we've had, Bukele talk about using the volcanoes in El Salvador to mine Bitcoin. And obviously you're in Canada, which is a very cold place, right? But it also has a lot of access to hydro energy and other renewable types of energy in order to mine Bitcoin and do it at a fairly reasonable price. So out of all the renewable projects, I guess, is there one that kind of stands out to you that is pretty exciting that you kind of can point to, be like, wow, that's a very innovative way to use some energy that's always been there, but nobody's really found a way to kind of grasp that energy, whether it's in development or already kind of deployed? Is there some sort of, I guess, renewable energy that that kind of excites you?
Yes, of course, because it's again this search for performance is also into finding new sources of energy. So in Quebec, we use hydroelectricity. It's in excess, wasted most of the time. We can use it. It's great. Now you have two types of use of energy that are already interesting for Bitcoin mining. The first one is about flare gas. So flare gas, it's mainly common in the US and some parts of Canada. It's an emanation from the fracking we do to find more oil or more gas into the soil, and it creates methane that is burned and creates CO2. Before, it was just sent into the atmosphere, and then we did nothing about it because it was too costly to transform this energy and put it into the grid. With Bitcoin miners, we can go straight at this gas well and put our infrastructure right next to it, and we've seen the benefit of it. Before, we were wasting energy, it was polluting. Now we are retransforming this energy, gas into energy and producing Bitcoin. And the fact that we do that, it's really interesting because it's a benefit for the environment. There are studies created by different kind of people, the most known being Daniel Batten. And he says that by using this kind of technology, we can even reduce the temperature of the global warming. You know, we have this 1.5%, 1.5 degrees Celsius goal for the Paris Accord. And by using the methane and reusing the methane, we can even reduce this temperature by 0.3 degrees Celsius, I think, which is enormous when you compare it to 1.5. And I think we are seeing more and more studies around this. So there's a company very well known doing this called Crusoe in the US. They raised a lot of dollars. They have even been featured by a World Economic Forum video lately from using this this technique. They are not mentioning Bitcoin really in the video, more like data centers and computing power, but this is really what it is. So it's really interesting, and it's everywhere in the world. Another technique that is interesting, it's reusing the methane or the gas that is created from trash. You have lots of landfills with lots of trash. It pollutes the environment. People are now reusing using this gas, or they can burn it, and the heat will produce energy to also produce Bitcoin and put data centers for Bitcoin. And that's only Bitcoin we can do that. Only us can go to a remote area anywhere in the world and say, you know what, you have nothing to do. Just I will use your emanation of whatever you have. Let me do my job, and then I will transform it into energy. I will put probably like a containers, and if in 2 years or 5 years I need to move, I will move. So this benefit that we are bringing for this kind of examples, I think, are in sync with what we were talking earlier of having more people willing to have Bitcoin miners on their grid and or in their countries. People are also, another example, people are also using tires. All tires in there, they were burned before, and same thing, they use the energy from the burning to recreate energy. So it's everywhere. If you have energy today, and if you're not asking, how can I mine Bitcoin with it, you're missing out. And more people will find and come to the conclusion that they need to mine Bitcoin, and will develop different kind of data centers like we do, or different.
Yeah, and I think just in general, like, you know, they're kind of using the ruse of data centers, just kind of how you're explaining there, right? I mean, we're going to need more computing power as the world gets more and more online as well. I mean, I know of one company in Mexico that's using, cow and other types of farm animal poop to convert that energy into being able to power Bitcoin miners. So there's a lot of crazy ideas out there. But hey, like you said, if you have energy and you're not using it, it's seemingly a no-brainer at this point, right? Yeah. But, you know, let's get into Sato. You've been kind of talking a little bit about like what you guys are doing, but let's get into the history of the company and kind of how you guys have got to where you're at today. So why don't you give us a little spiel here of... Sure. You know, how you came up with the idea to start a Bitcoin mining company, and how you guys have come all this way.
We started in 2017. Myself, I'm an entrepreneur. I started on the internet in 1995, so I'm that old. And I've seen Web 0, Web 1, Web 2, Web 3, you name it. I've seen lots of things. And of course, being in technology, I was passionate with Bitcoin early on. I started looking at it in 2013 and getting really into it in 2017. Pure luck, pure fun. At the beginning, it was a side project with three other guys. One being my brother, and we were all living in New York, and we said, hey, we love Bitcoin, we love the blockchain, how about we put our money together and start a mining farm? They were like, oh yeah, okay, let's do it, and that's how we started. At the beginning, it was like a side project. We bought our first 200 S9 at that time that we received quite quickly, and we found a site in Quebec that was also very favorable for our activity because we have 20 megawatts of energy. And from there, we've been able to build. So we went from 2 megawatts to 20 megawatts. Today, we run around like 6,000 computers, which is 0.55 exahash. To give you an idea, this is around like 0.12% now that the hash rate is a little higher, 0.12% of the total Bitcoin network. We are not the biggest Bitcoin miners, but we have a relatively big size. We are super efficient. If you look at the data and the reports that are produced frequently, you can always see that we are ranking the top three or top four most efficient miners. And in the business, it's not the biggest to win; it's the more efficient. We are transforming the energy into computing power. We are infrastructure people and we are operators. It needs lots of capex because we are buying our energy, but also buying our transformers. We build our own data centers. We build our own software to manage our fleet of miners and all these kind of things. And in this business, if you want to do that, it's capex intensive. So it's capex intensive in two sides or in two ways. One, from the infrastructure, again, transforming the energy, buying fans, racks, and these kind of things. And then for buying the computer. So that's why we decided to get listed and become a publicly listed miner in 2021 under the ticker SATO, as you can see here under my name. And the idea is what, one, we wanted to bring some kind of openness into our business, into the market of Bitcoin mining. Sometimes can be a little bit edgy, but like Bitcoin miners, and we wanted to really open everything and publish our quarterly results, annual results. We also publish on our website our monthly results. On buysato.com, you can go and see them. The second reason why we wanted to get listed is because it's a great way to raise money at scale and to continue the development. As I was saying, once you're efficient, you want to be as big as you can. We went from 2 megawatt to 20. Now we want to go from 20 to 200 in the next months and years as fast as we can and deploy this capital. And by being listed on the stock market, you have different ways where you can raise money via debt or equity. And we are following the steps of other Bitcoin miners who were listed before us. You know, you have lots of success stories of Bitcoin miners who started on the TSXV and now they are on the NASDAQ. They've been able to raise lots of money during the last bull market and deploy this money not only during the bull but also during the bear. We are next. We are the next one doing this. We qualified on the stock market a little bit late when we were listed at the end of 21. So we entered a bear market right after being listed, but we manage extremely well this time. You can look at our financial, for example. We are operating cash flow positive, meaning that we are producing more revenues from our operations than the cost of producing the Bitcoin. You can see that on average for the whole year, we made a Bitcoin in power cost for around $15,000. So it's also a good indicator to what the halving will mean, double this. And the halving, it will cost $30,000 for us to produce a Bitcoin. I mean, depending on the factors at that time. But if you look in the past, this is also a good indicator of why we are well positioned to pass the next halving, and we're ready to go to the next level. So it's again a super exciting time because it comes with the halving, it comes with election time probably in the US, it comes with the ETF, with the new accounting method. Everything is aligned to have, I think, an incredible market, not only for Bitcoin but also for publicly Bitcoin miners like us. It's not only going to be us; it's going to be all of the publicly listed miners who are going to benefit from it. What we have seen in the last bull is that the stock price of publicly Bitcoin miners like us are going to the moon when the Bitcoin is going up. And it has already been the case to some extent since the beginning of the year. We are and by we, again, I say all of the Bitcoin miners, we are overperforming Bitcoin. So when the Bitcoin goes up, we go higher. And for example, if you take our particular ticker, SATO, from January to end of November, we took, I think, 300% increase on our share price. So let's see where we're going to go next cycle, next bull. But I'm really excited to see where we're gonna go.
Yeah, that's great stuff. I do have one question though, because I mean, obviously, there's a lot of benefits that go into, you know, going to publicly listed. But there are some difficulties, or there could be, right? I mean, especially being in Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining specifically, with all the kind of geopolitical things that we lined out. Has there been any kind of difficulties or any like hurdles since you've come publicly listed because of, you know, the industry that you're in? Or has it been, I guess, somewhat smooth sailing since it's been kind of, about a year and a half or 2 years or so?
Well, I guess it's being listed and the political environment are not really dependent. You could be private and have the same issues and being public. However, being public, it's an amazing adventure. It's an amazing way to go. And the fact that you are putting yourself into this mindset of publishing your results every quarter and making sure that you are striving for efficiency, that you have shareholders to report to, and to make sure that you can really increase the value of the share over time. It's an extremely great mindset that is one of the best adventures I ever lived in my entire career. I created maybe five companies in the past, and this is by far the most interesting and probably the one that I see the most outcome coming in the future. It's not always easy, so, because it costs more money, and in a bear market, it costs money to get listed. You have a regulator, you need to do your audits, you have lawyers and everything, so it's more costly. But in a bull market, it's a Ferrari to raise money and to go to the next level, and that's why we went that route, because we wanted to be able to go as fast as possible in a short period of time. You know, we should not forget that even if we are excited that the bull is coming, the bull is not going to last forever. We're going to find another bear after that. Is it going to be 12 months, 15 months after? It could also be delayed, you know, who knows? So we really need to be cautious and careful. But at the same time, we need to be aggressive into the way we will grow our company. And this is exactly the time we are in, and that's why it's the best time to do what we do. It's the best time to look at Bitcoin, the best time to look at publicly Bitcoin miners like us. I think we're going to see a ride that we've never seen before.
Yeah, and that's a great way to answer that question. But the one last one I do have, because, you know, obviously you brought it up, right? I mean, the bull's not going to last forever. One thing that a lot of miners got into troubles with, you know, with the last bull and then the consequently the bear market, was they got over leveraged. They were buying a lot of Bitcoin or holding a lot on their balance sheet. So from, I guess I'll just kind of tell you my perspective and you can tell me, you know, kind of like how you guys position yourselves. But the way I view Bitcoin miners is kind of similar to oil and gold miners, in a sense where they do have an asset that they mine that is volatile. But, you know, you never really hear about an oil miner holding on to oil or a gold miner kind of holding on to gold. They try to, you know, I guess, distance themselves from the volatility of the asset. But it's different in Bitcoin. Bitcoin miners subsequently try to hold on to Bitcoin because why did you get into Bitcoin, right? I mean, you think Bitcoin, the hard money, it's the best money in the world, right? So I can see the kind of the give and take, right, with like wanting to hold Bitcoin, but also there could be some potential, you know, shortcomings if you do that. So in your eyes and in Sato's strategy, like, do you guys have a strategy to hold Bitcoin on the balance sheet, or are you guys trying to, I guess, like ride the waves of the ups and the downs of Bitcoin by, I guess, holding more of a cash position?
Well, our strategy is to be opportunistic. In the past, we have always used Bitcoin to grow because we want to grow. We want to continue adding more mining power. And using your Bitcoin and your production is a great way to do that because you don't create any dilution. And it's sometimes not really seen as a way to grow, but lots of Bitcoin miners are using their Bitcoin to pay their electricity, but also to buy new rigs. So we've done it in the past. We intend to do it in the future. But at the same time, we are big believers in Bitcoin. We believe the Bitcoin price is going to go to new height. I don't see why Bitcoin is not going to have a market cap at least as big as the one of gold. So we're talking about like 10 trillion or even a little bit more now for gold. Whereas in Bitcoin, we are not at 1 trillion yet. So we're talking about the 10x for the value if this happens. And that's only the beginning. I think it could be even more than that. So in that sense, holding Bitcoin is key. And at some point, and different of the timing between a bull and between a bear, being able to raise money and dilute the company via equity or doing some debt could make more sense than using your Bitcoin. And sometimes you also need to use your Bitcoin. That's why we're opportunistic. We've done it in the past. At the same time, you need to be super cautious. And what you were discussing before and where we've seen miners having issues is because in a bull market, people are getting nuts. People are getting nuts and they're like, I don't care. I can do a debt at 25% interest. The Bitcoin is taking 200%. So I don't care. But that's true only for a certain time. So you make your calculation. And then when the bear happens, you're in a crunch and you can't pay your debt. Same time with buying rigs. People are making a simple calculation thinking, oh, okay, I can buy this computer for $3,000, $5,000, or $15,000. And it will make Bitcoin, but then they can't really realize the price of energy, the difficulty, but the fact also that sometimes when you buy Bitcoin miners rigs, they can come in the future. So the math of the time at which you receive your miners is completely different from the one you've been calculating when you were buying it. So all of these kind of things make it so that sometimes, yeah, like in every industries, you have winners and losers. And that's why you need to be cautious. We've seen it again since 2017. At the last bull, we didn't want to buy miners for too much money. Instead, what we decided to do was to put our money into our infrastructure. So what we did was to build more energy, more racks, more data centers. And originally, what we did was to do hosting. So we were hosting some computers. We're doing a part of self-mining, but also a part of hosting. And when we saw that it was more interesting to become self-mining, we bought the miners that we had in hosting. So it was great because we bought it at an extremely right price. And there was no delivery risk, no delivery time, no import tax. And we paid. 15 minutes later, we paid in USDC, I guess. 15 minutes later, they were mining on our pools. So it was a great way to grow into a bear market without taking too much risk. Now that we are entering into a bull market, I think we're going to see the same kind of like crazy things happening. And it's the experience that we have, which I think will make us go to the next level in the next bull.
That's awesome stuff. Well, Romain, you've been very generous with your time, so I appreciate you coming on this show. Why don't you tell people where they can find you and find out more about Sato?
Cool. So buysato.com. Very simple. That's our website. You can find everything. You can find what we do. You can find all of our information, download our financial statement, MDMA. Very interesting document, MDMA, management discussion and analysis. We tell everything by word. We do two documents. One is everything numbers, and the one is everything with word. If you read the two, you know everything about the company. This is perfect. We also explain more about our team. We have an amazing team. Small team, but amazing team working with us. We have also developed some applications that are made for Ordinals. So we have an application, a wallet for iOS and Android, where people can stock and put their Ordinals. We have a Chrome extension that you can connect with websites such as Magic Eden, for example. We also developed an open source software for people to look into their wallet so that they can see if they have rare sats. And if they have rare sats, they can extract them and put them into a specific wallet so that if they want to sell them later, they can. Again, completely open source, non-custodial. We don't know your address. We don't touch your phone. You run the software. People can find access to this from our website. It's under the part called L2s because we want to bring more ways for people to use Bitcoin, and we want to build also infrastructure on Bitcoin that are not only the infrastructure from the Bitcoin mining and the computing power, but also the software and the tools for people to use Bitcoin more. For myself, where I'm the most active it's on Twitter. I'm Romain BTC, BTC, Romain BTC, very simple. And people can follow me, and this is where I post most of the things. I know I'm old. I said Twitter, it's X, sorry.
I can still remember when it was called Twitter too, so don't worry about that. But I'll post all that in the show notes. You guys go check them out. And yeah, Romain, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Brandon, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.